Greetings, greetings, greetings. No, this is not Scroobius Pip, as you can plainly tell. This is Buddy Peace. I'm the producer, mixer and engineer of the Distraction Pieces podcast that you are listening to and hopefully always listen to every Wednesday. I just wanted to put out a shout to the lovely, charming, ferociously handsome Team 3W crew, the listeners of the Distraction Pieces podcast, that I'm available for any mixing, engineering, production, music production for any of your podcasts or anyone you know who records podcasts. It would be ace to talk to you. So yeah, give me a shout. I'm over at buddy at buddypeace.com. So as it sounds, just B-U-D-D-Y at buddypeace.com or on Twitter, which is at buddy_peace. Alright, I've already eaten up far too much of the start of this podcast, so let's get you welcomed in with the god, yeah. Scroobius Pip. I gotta go now.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Scroobius Pip, and I'm walking through rural France, and I thought I'd do a bonus podcast episode for you. I feel like Adam Buxton as I'm walking through woods and trees and countryside and recording. I hope it records okay and it's not too windy or anything. Hi everyone, this is a bonus episode on the Friday. We've got a lot of great guests coming up. I'm off in France for a little bit, and I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm in a town called Mello, M-E-L-L-O. If you look it up on Google Maps, you'll see it hasn't really got anything. It's got houses, and I think a hotel, but not really any shops, or any restaurants or anything. I'm out here shooting a film, and whenever I'm not on set, I've got some time spare, I guess, and I'm doing some writing, and I downloaded a series called Chance, which I'm really enjoying. But I thought, preempting that it might be a bit quiet, I did a post on Facebook asking you guys to ask some questions. So I'm going to record one now. I've got up early, and I've gone for a walk. I've been barked at a lot by dogs. Dogs in Mello aren't a fan of me. I might walk and do the outro. I'm walking past the particular bit where there were a lot of angry dogs, and see if that's an audio treat for you guys. So I got up early and came for a walk before I need to go on set and do some filming, and I thought I'll do a quick hour of your questions. And if there's any left over, I'll try and find some time later in the week to do another hour to go up next Friday. In the new year, I'm going to start doing regular bonus episodes on Fridays. I've got a specific plan in mind for them, but I won't tell you yet in case I never get around to doing it. And you'll be furiously disappointed. But yeah, that's a plan, because I don't want to... I'm doing these as bonuses because I've got so many good guests coming up. You will have already had Jean Grey this week, and depending on this, on when this drops, you've either got Johnny Lee Miller to follow, or you've just had Johnny Lee Miller. And then we've got Rick Edwards, and we've got my end of year films of 2017 special. I'll be doing that. I'm tallying them up and deciding my favourites. And then we're going to have a drunk cast and a network drunk cast with, that's the plan anyway, with everyone off the network, including Dr. Susie Gage there, doing regular alcohol blood checks, or breath tests. I mean, she's not going to take our blood, that would be mental, particularly if she's drunk. So yeah, there's loads to come, but I thought rather than detract from a Wednesday or take up a Wednesday, I'll sneak this out as a little bonus. I'm dragging the intro out because I'm walking to try and find somewhere nice to sit down to go through your questions. I should mention that we're brought to you as ever by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. At this time of year, you could kind of reflect and go, have I enjoyed hours and hours of free podcasts this year? And if the answer is yes, then maybe pop over to speechdevelopmentrecords.com and buy a t-shirt or a mug or my DVD or any vinyl or anything like that as a little thank you. You know, you could share the books. I've got the signed books in the web store. Oh, there's a car coming. Yeah, I've got signed books of my Distraction Pieces book, which is a Times bestseller, and of my illustrated poetry book. So they're both in the web store. Hang on, let me just climb up on this rock. Right, I'm up on a rock. Yeah, they're both in the web store, signed. So you could go and get them. And obviously we've got all the winter merch, which is... There's hats. Oh, you can hear one of the dogs in the background. He hates someone else. Scarves, jumpers, rucksacks, umbrellas, all sorts. All at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. But right now, I'm sat down, so now I can... I'll get my stuff out. And I'll start going through your questions. So while I get that out of my pocket, let's hit the intro music. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Right. Here we are. What I've done is I've... when I get these Ask Pip posts on Facebook, I like the ones I think are good and I'm going to try and get around to answering. And that kind of normally puts them to the top. It puts them in a random order, but towards the top. And then what I've done is I've screenshotted a load of them because I knew I was in France, so I might not be able to get a signal or on my page. So... let's begin. I'm going to start with a really simple one from Gareth Lamb. What are you up to in France? I touched upon that in the intro. I'm doing a film out here. It's really good fun. I'm really enjoying it. I had the first down set. As I recalled this, my first down set was yesterday. I've got a couple of weeks out here. It's an amazing location. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's amazing. What's the name of big, like a mansion type... estate, this amazing estate, and it's this old building, and it's all the sets look amazing, the script is really funny. I won't go into tons of details on it, but a lot of the characters have the same name, and I'm one of the characters that has the same name, so they have descriptions instead, and mine is described as a hipster. And with my first day on set yesterday, I was hugely disappointed at what a short amount of time it took hair and makeup to transform me into a hipster, because I swear I'm not a hipster, but apparently I blatantly am, so there's that. So I'm doing a film out here, and as I said, staying in this tiny, tiny little town called Mello, and yeah, there's nowhere to eat or drink or get anything. If we get back to the hotel in time, the crazy hotel manager will make us some food of his choosing. He's literally got there last night, and he was like, you want some food? We're like, yeah, expecting a menu. And he just brought some food out. So, all right, thank you. My room has got three beds and an upstairs. It's really odd. Anyway, I'm giving you a lot too much information. I'm excited to be here, so I'm rambling. Let's get on to the next one. Kane James McMillan. Do you scout new artists? No, I don't. A lot of you will know I've got a record label called Speech Development Records. A lot of you won't know. It's literally just me. I've not got some big infrastructure or big budgets or anything like that. So the point of the label at the moment, if we release anything more, is just to release records of people I'm already down with and already associated with. So the POS album came out this year, and that was amazing because I worked with POS on my solo record, but I've been a fan of him for a long time. And his new record came out digitally in America at the beginning of the year, and I happened to be out in America. And I was listening to it constantly. And then he hit me up out of the blue and asked if I wanted to release it in the UK, which I really did, because it's my album of the year. So Yeah, it's things like that. In general, I don't particularly intend to release anything else. Because, it's just me and I'm really busy. And there's been a few records. Vinyl's annoyed me, if I'm honest. I'm a big fan. I'm proud that we release everything on vinyl. Since we started as a proper label, that is. And just, it's become hugely unreliable. I've worked a few times with a company called Disc Wizards, who have just been shit and just meant that my releases have come out a month late, 2 months late. And if I can't do something well or reliably, like if that's out of my control, I'd rather not do it. So, yeah, I don't know what the plan is there. But as I said, it's just I've got Amy, who runs the social media. I post pictures of her and my godchildren every now and then. So, but that's my staff. Like someone helping out on the social media is about it. But yeah. So no, I'm not looking to sign anyone. I'm not scouting anyone. In general, if I have new acts that are coming up, I explain to them that I can't do what is needed for a new act. They need a big push and they need a lot of focus. And I'm not the guy for that at the moment. Another lorry coming past. I think it's the one that went past on the way here. Let's let him go. Or I could pretend to answer a really important question. Yep, he thinks I look mental. As I sit on a rock with a mobile recorder. Oh, he's pulling up. Oh, shit. I hope he's not going to give me any trouble. Why is he stopping? This could get strange. Hopefully it won't. Yeah, I've got this recorder that's got like just a fuzzy head on that looks like a troll's head. So it looks like a troll. Oh, he's stopping to wee on his tyre. Let's ignore that then. Tim Sermon. When is Taboo coming back? And worst toilets at a gig? I don't know about the toilets. I guess it'll be a festival. They're always or often quite bad. When's Taboo coming back? I don't know. I know we're shooting it next year. We've got a second season. I've been optioned for a second season. So, yeah, that's exciting. Kenny Morrison, think you could get Rogan on your podcast? I'd like to. I say to people a lot, I have a lot of people request. I mean, I think this question comes up a bit, so I'll try not to repeat myself. But I have a lot of people request guests. And the best way often to request guests to me is to request them to them. When I had Chris Jericho on, he said how people had kept saying to him, it needs to come on Distraction Pieces and chat to Scroobius Pip. So that makes a difference. The podcast as well, this is me being, it sounds like I'm all woe is me, but the podcast is the same as the label. It's just me. I've not got a team of bookers. I've not got this crazy book of industry contact details. I've got the same access as you guys. Obviously, I've met a few people over the years, so I've got access in that way, but if it's not someone who I'm close with, all I can do is tweet them or Instagram them or Facebook them. So, yeah, there's that. Right. I jumped to that. Now I'm going to go on to earlier ones. So, Rob Taylor, besides your own, do you recommend any other decent podcasts? I do. There's a new section. Hopefully you've heard it. I'm all sniffly. I'm so sorry. But I'm in the middle of the French countryside and it's a bit chilly. At the end of the podcast, I've got a new thing called Pip's Pod Picks. And the way I've done it is I've recorded a load and they should just rotate. So the first five should be rotating until the end of the year, I think. And then there'll be a new five rotating. So hopefully you'll get a recommendation each time. So yeah, have a listen there and I'll recommend a load of podcasts to you. Mike West, do you think... Oh, he's had his wee. Do you think the relying on the Kindness of Strangers tour that helped your career would be feasible in the modern music scene and how independent musicians can create a fan base in this day and age? Yeah, I do. I should explain that for those who don't know. At the start of my career, I did a thing called the Relying on the Kindness of Strangers tour, and that involved making a load of flyers that had fake quotes on them from people that I'd made up saying how great I am. At that point, I'd never done a single gig and no one had really heard my music. And I just toured the country living in my van or a 1987 Space Cruiser and played on street corners and open mics. And yeah, it did kind of kick things off. There was loads of zero success. It was a great experience for giving me confidence and throwing myself in at the deep end. But yeah, I think that works in any day and age. I think it'd work more now because you could actually keep in contact with people better because of all the different social medias, and there's a lot more ways that you could document it and post about it. All I had was MySpace. That was the one then. And yeah, the fact is, all that tour was about, it wasn't anything genius. It was just about actually getting off your ass and doing it and committing to it, rather than, this isn't an attack, rather than asking people, what should I do? It was going, oh, I'll try this. And I've always been a big fan of that in all areas of my career. Rather than saying, oh, how'd you get here? Just going and trying it. Or how'd you do that? Just going and trying and trying to find out. So rather than asking the question, kind of seeing if you can just find the answer immediately. And another car that thinks I'm talking into a troll. So yeah, that's kind of my advice there. Just getting out there and doing it. I think it's completely doable. And I think even more so in this day and age, as said, because it's easier for people to find you after they've seen you. The fact is, I did it. And a lot of the time, I might have made a good impact. But if they've forgotten my name, I made a point of having flyers with me that had my MySpace page on. And things like that, to try and give people somewhere to find me. But again, it's easy to forget, but it's easier to find people these days. So yeah, I reckon it's well doable. James Dodds, your rhythmic tapping to help with your stutter helped me a lot in being calm in conversations. Oh, this is, it's just a little thank you on there. Yeah, I didn't invent that. I get a lot of love for that. I did a YouTube video called Stutter, about my stutter, and in it I mentioned a tapping technique to control a stutter, and I was just told that by a bassist in Poeticat's band, and yeah, it seems to work. I like it. Liam McShane, what are your thoughts on McGregor's latest activities when he stormed the octagon and attacked Mark Goddard and a Bellator official? I think it's fucking embarrassing, and Connor is just, he's embarrassing himself at the moment, man. I know for years a lot of it has been an act, but I think it's got past that, and I don't think he realises anymore. It also says there that the Goddard would be an amazing guest, and he would. And me and Mark have been talking for a long time about that. Mark was the trainer when I did a course on MMA refereeing and judging, and he's one of the best refs in the world at the moment. And in this incident, I thought he handled it amazingly. He was calm, controlled. But Connor was storming in there in an event that he wasn't part of. He was pushing people onto an injured fighter and just being out of control. And it's embarrassing. I think Connor has done amazing things and changed the game, but it doesn't give you a free pass to do what you want and act like a prick. I've called him out previously on social media. I've also, just to make it clear, I've praised him a lot, but I think you've got to hold your the people you like to as stringent rules as the people you dislike. And Connor's an example of that. I called him out because he used the word faggot a lot in a backstage clip, and that's bullshit. Grow up, mate. You're better than that. And then this, yeah. But yeah, I think he needs to have a sit down and a time out and think about what he's done. Stuart Bramley, when you were touring, what was the best takeaway you had? Mate, don't talk about takeaways when I'm in a town that hasn't got anywhere that delivers any food or that I can walk to get food. It's tough. It's tough out here on the streets. I was always a Pizza Hut or Papa John's fan. I eat a lot of Domino's, but in my town of Stamford Lee Hope, the only pizza place that delivers to me is Domino's. So every time I'd get to a town and I could have a Pizza Hut delivered, I was hugely excited. So, yeah, it's not an exciting story or revelation there, but they were my ones. Oh, no, when we were in Dublin recently, we had, what's it called, the meat wagon or something? We had food delivered there. Me, Chris and Stu. I'm sure we talk about it on the Dublin Live podcast, but that was amazing. A lot of MMA questions at the start. I'll get them out of the way quickly. Robert Samuel Rock. Pip, do you think Bisping is daft for accepting the Gastelum fight? coming off a loss to GSP at the start of the month, then jumping straight back into the auction at the end of the month. And that's not an easy fight easier. Would love to hear your thoughts. Cheers. Just first of all, I think Bisping's daft anyway. I'm not a hater at all, but he's another one who's dropped the word faggot in arguments and stuff publicly at UFC events. And it's embarrassing. It's fucking embarrassing. Particularly, I mean, you mentioned him coming back, or GSP coming back. GSP is an icon in MMA, and one of the things that made him so amazing was he's always been polite and controlled and calm and just, yeah, amazing. And then you've got people acting how Bisping acts, and it's embarrassing. But yeah, I think that aside, I think it's a bad move, and I think it shouldn't particularly be allowed. If he'd just got choked out against GSP, I'd say maybe all right, because what a lot of people don't know is choking out is fine. To be choked unconscious in an MMA match, it's not pleasant. You wake up kind of feeling like a confused baby, but there's no long-term damage, whereas blows to the head, there is long-term damage, and that needs recovery time. And Bisping wasn't just choked out. He was rocked, then mounted and elbowed repeatedly, and then choked out. So that concerns me that he's going into another fight so soon after that. But that's not me saying he's, what was the thing, daft for doing that. I just think it's unsafe. So yeah, that concerns me. I don't like the idea of that. Regardless of who the opponent is, even, Gastelum is great. But I just think that's a bad move, because health should be paramount. And those who aren't into MMA will be going, oh, what do you mean health was paramount? You're beating each other up. Honestly, it's a sport that, outside of these unique instances, is the referees are there to protect the fighters. It was a great thing, a Rafael Sanchez fight at the weekend. I was glad Paul Felder, who I think is a fantastic addition to the commentary team, he highlighted it, because Sanchez knocked a guy out. And often, you know, in the heat of the moment, they'll swarm, because you have to keep going until the ref stops you. And he jumped on top of him and was flying through the air with a hammer fist, realised the guy was clearly out, and stopped the hammer fist about a centimetre away from his face. And to show that restraint and control, I thought was fantastic. And it shows that it's a sport, it's a contest, it's not about brutality and all that kind of thing. But I won't go on about that anymore, because I know a lot of you aren't into MMA, but I am. I think it's great. Jessica Lightner. Oh, what time am I at? Yeah, I'm all good. I can go for longer. I've only been going for 20 minutes, for God's sake. Is the struggle meant to be entirely from the perspective of Johnny Depp, or is it your own perspective? Or maybe something entirely different? I can't help but wonder. I don't like explaining lyrics. I think it's more fun to leave them to interpretation, but that's one I get asked about a lot. And I've explained it once or twice in the past, so why not? That song isn't particularly about Johnny Depp. My general answer online, when people say, why do you choose Johnny Depp? I say it's because he's a serial killer. But that doesn't seem as funny and amusing anymore because of the recent domestic violence charges. And I'll talk about domestic violence later on in the podcast, because it's something that I've written songs about. But I also think, again, as all, it's nuanced. It's wrong. 100% it's wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to be trying to fight anyone's corner here. But yeah, I decided that isn't as funny a response every time, because there's some darkness going on in his life at the moment. But it's just about celebrity and the way we hold celebrities. We project them to a life that isn't anything like normal life, then we hold them to the standards of normal life, and that's weird. We'll praise them as geniuses and the most handsome person in the world or the best person in the world, and we will expect that to not change the way they look at things or treat people or act. And I think that's odd. I think it's understandable that people go on a bender sometimes, or go out of control, or sleep with loads of people, or whatever else, because it's not the life that, again, it's not excusing anything, but it's understanding. And the reason I wrote the struggle then was, as most things, I feel that the best way to make an example of something is to take it to an extreme. So I wrote about someone who's an actor who can't get any kicks or buzzes anymore, has nothing to look up to because he's what everyone looks up to, and starts to get his kicks from murder. That's obviously taking it to a hell of an extreme. But yeah, that's the point of that. It's not actually about Johnny. It's not really about me. It's said entirely from your own perspective. Or is some of it from your own perspective. Not really. I've not achieved that level of fame that anything's changed particularly much. I think anything I've done that's bad, I wouldn't want to use anything as an excuse, other than humanity. Right, Andrew McLean Reed. Given the recent sex scandals, do you think that the creative industries are more prone to these abuses, or is it that they are more high profile so we hear more about them? Creative types are generally more liberal or lefty, so why the poor attitude to women in acting and music, etc.? As a proponent of a variety of art forms, I reckon you may have more informed views than us muggles. I don't have particularly more informed views, but I don't think it's particularly much worse. I think you're right. I think there is just more exposure. I think with absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's that kind of thing, and there's degrees along that way. We're seeing it in Westminster a lot at the moment, with a lot of stuff there. I guarantee there's a hell of a lot of it in offices with bosses and managers and people of power exploiting their position. But yeah, I think it's a tough one. There was another question on this. Let me just try and find it so I can talk about all of them at once, because I don't want to... Oh, here we go, yeah. Peter Stewart asked, were you aware of the domestic violence allegations against Michael Fassbender before inviting him onto your show? And then there's a backup one there. So I'll address that first. I wasn't aware, but I have been made aware since. And I've looked into them a bit. And domestic violence or domestic incidents are always a really tough one if there's only one incident on record. Number one, and again, just to make it clear, I am not excusing anything at all. I think anyone who hits a woman or... in any of these situations, it's unacceptable. But right, number one, I think everyone is fallible. Everyone is capable of doing horrific things in a moment and doing amazing things in a moment. I don't have the belief that mankind... me and Chris talk about this a lot, is when someone does something horrible, I never find it excusable, but I can always see how it's still quite human, and I don't think it helps us to make these people into monsters, because they're not monsters, they're just people who've done something horrible, and that's scarier in my opinion. But yeah, on domestic incidences, that's such an intimate and intense a situation that if we've only got two sides of a story that are conflicting, and with the Michael Fassbender one, it was dropped, and again, we don't know anything there. We can easily say, and it's completely viable, that it was dropped because of a payoff or because of pressure, but it could be dropped because either side went, oh, actually, in the cold light of day, it wasn't as bad as it seemed, or this or that, or emotions were high, and things like that. So it's a tough one. So what I'm trying to say is, even if I did know, I don't think I would have brought it up, because that's... If I got Harvey Weinstein in front of me, I'd bring stuff up, because it's multiple offences and multiple things. But if I've got someone who seems to have one thing there, it's a tough one. I don't know if it's my place. I'm not a journalist. Again, there's another question that will make me touch upon that, but I'm not a journalist. I'm there to have conversations. I had someone recently hit me up saying, on the Fassbender one, in fact, he said he didn't enjoy it, and it's been one of the most popular ones. It was one of my favourites, but he said he didn't enjoy it because it was just talking about his new film. And I said, well, no, we talked about like some of my favourite films of his, Fish Tank and Shame, and got some amazing insights. He was like, yeah, but it was all just about his films. And I was like, well, I'm a big fan of his films, so if I've got a limited amount of time with someone, I'm going to talk about that. He's like, yeah, but I would have wanted to hear just about some banter and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I mean, again, it's like, well, I asked him what he does outside of work, and he talked about F1 and skiing, and I'm not into them, but I am really into his films and films in general and acting, so I was excited to talk about that. But yeah, what I was explaining to the person was, I have people on to talk about the stuff I'm excited about and into. I want them to enjoy it. I turn people down all the time if I don't feel I'm into them, if they're not something I'm about. I've had a few recently, some huge names. I won't say, because people will always read it as insulting. But if I happen to not be into someone's music, doesn't mean it's shit. It means it's not to my taste. So regardless of if they're a big name or not, I don't think I'm the right person to talk to them. So yeah, that's Fassbender, I guess. I didn't know about it, but I don't know if I would have brought it up, because I think things like that, we love public trial, but there are rules and regulations in place, and things have to be, we have to have a little bit of faith in that, right? So if it went to court and then that was elected by those involved to not go to court or to settle outside of court, then that's not my business. But that brings us on to the next one. And this is something I've not talked about, and it's going to be a bit awkward and weird. But Ross Delaney added to that, in a similar sort of light, were you aware of the allegations made against Itch of the King Blues before working with him / his show? Been on my mind a while. It seemed pertinent to bring up in the light of recent things with other rock stars and musicians and so on and so forth. Right, this is one that, again, it's weird. I'm not going to go into tons of detail because I'm not a fan of this kind of trial by media or by public. When I had Itch on, I've known Itch for years, I need to put in here. Despite that, I don't believe in any bros before hoes type bullshit. But as I said, equally, I don't believe in public trial. So I didn't know about the allegations. And I don't want to highlight it or push anyone in any direction, but there are blogs that were written about Itch, and there was a counter blog written by Itch. So if you're going to read anything, read all. Or a counter blog or counter post, I'm not sure. I wasn't aware of any of that when we did the podcast, or when the King Blues did one album or an EP on Speech Development Records during that release. So after the release had started, and all we did was one EP with one video, and that was all we ever kind of agreed to do. While that was out, a few people highlighted it to me, and I responded to them and said, look, I don't know anything about this. It sounds like something that needs a legal a resolution, either to stop slander against Itch or to stop, crimes or abuse committed by Itch. And I said to these people, if there's any way I can help, more than happy to give any assistance. But yeah, it's not my place to do a private investigation because I'm not an investigator. I can't find things out. How much else should I mention? I mean, I will just say that recently I've been contacted by someone who I believe was trying to look into it. And I said to them, I don't have any information I'm aware of, but keep my contact details. And if you feel I can help down the line, because I believe if there's anything I can help with, it'll either help clear Itch's name or expose someone who I don't think is a bad guy to be a bad guy, because we don't really know people. But yeah, I won't say too much more on that because it's not my business. I will say that when these allegations started to come through, I sent an email to Itch and his management and said, I think this needs to be addressed and needs to be, even if it's just to me, I need to know what's going on here. Although, again, I don't believe in public me doing some sneaky investigation. I'm still not just going to ignore it because it's someone I know. So I confronted Itch over emailing it, and he explained his side and said what his plans were. And I believe that was before he made his public statement. Just to be clear, I'm not implying in any way that it prompted his public statement. I'm sure he was going through it already. And yeah, so that's that. I wasn't aware of that, but equally, it's an odd one. I don't believe in any kind of, you've got to give your friends the benefit of the doubt. Nah, you've got to give anyone the benefit of the doubt because of the whole innocent until proven guilty. But again, domestic is tough. I think it's easier with the Weinstein type thing where there's multiple people and it's not an intimate relationship. It's a work relationship that's been inappropriately used. Also, I should highlight as well, actually, because that's what I was going to say on the last one. This is how we got from the struggle. I think there's nuances to all of it. I did a kind of post about this, but again, I don't want to post about it much online because I can't add anything of worth. But all of the stuff going on at the moment, there's nuances, man. And we're going to need to become more and more aware of these nuances, because if we put everyone in the same boat, it lessens those who've done more horrific things. And Harvey Weinstein, if the allegations of actual rape and stuff like that are true, that's a different place to Louis C.K. asking if it's okay if he masturbates and then masturbating in front of people. Both are fucked up and wrong, in my opinion. But they're still different. Things can be horrific, but different levels of horrific. We don't have to bunch them all into one place. And we don't. And by acknowledging the nuances and differences, it's not condoning any. But the other thing is, there's a difference between being a piece of shit and being a criminal, or being a sleaze and being a criminal. And in music, in all these industries, basically, I've seen a few things recently where people say, there was a wrestling promoter or something, and people said that he cheated a lot and was promiscuous and used his position of power to do that. And whilst I'm not a fan of people cheating, I think that's shitty. I don't think that's anyone else's business. I think people on every level of life do that. And equally, I believe the only roles where you have any duty of care are teachers and the doctors and stuff like that. Obviously, it's different. I'm not, when you're looking at certain musicians over the years with underage people, let's be clear, that's wrong. They're underage. The reason it's wrong is they're underage. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, it's not for me, and this wasn't my way, but again, I think we're too quick to judge people. A musician on tour is sleeping with a different person every night. It's a band, it's a musician on tour. That shit happens. I don't think there's, it may not be acceptable, it's even worse. And again, I've toured a lot, I've seen a lot of bands cheating on their partners and stuff like that, and that's shitty. But I don't think it's anyone's business, and it's not a crime. I've also seen people, when I worked in HMV, cheating on their partners. And that's no different, in my opinion. People argue, yeah, but you're in a position of awe and a position of power in that way. No more than the cool kids at school who had the girls fancy them and might have abused that, or the sports star at school or whatever else. It's kind of... I think there's a difference between being like, oh, I don't like that, and that's unacceptable and disgraceful. You could not agree with something. I'm just talking myself in circles here, so I'll get off that tense subject. But actually, that's what I will say. We will bring some of this up on the Christmas Drunk Cast, because I want to discuss it when there's a woman in the room. I've heard all of this stuff discussed a lot between men recently, and that's fine. It's a discussion that has to happen on many levels, but I'd much rather it happens when, you know, yeah, the percentage, the ratio of penises isn't 1-to-1. But yeah, I mean, to be clear, that's men and women, you know, in music. Oh, some cars. In music and in entertainment in general, and in, man, I've seen it in the workplace as well, who choose to be promiscuous or whatever else, or cheat. And those things aren't... it's fine for you to not agree with that, but that's, again, they're the ones that aren't a crime, and it's not anyone else's business as such. Anyway, probably dug myself in big holes. Tom Cullen. You know the second verse in Development you don't do because it's straight garbage? Did that really exist? And did you ever perform it as part of a song, poem at any stage? Yeah, that... on my first ever EP thing that only my mates ever got, that 76, who produces Hardcore Listing, he's got copies of it. There was a song called Screw Rap, and that was probably the first thing I ever wrote, and it was me beatboxing into a loop pedal, a looping it and rapping over the top. I look so mental talking into a troll's head. And that was... the first verse of that became the first verse of Development, and the second verse I thought was shit, so I rewrote it, and that's how Development kind of came about. I think, is it Screw Rap? I think it was. I don't think it's anything on my solo, on No Commercial Breaks, so I think it was that. I think that's how that went. Dan Buttery, you're welcome to paraphrase this. Bearing in mind you've said that your songs don't come from personal experience, how do we react to the fact that they speak to people on a very personal level? You Will See Me helped and still helps me deal with a very difficult breakup. The question, I suppose, is how do you feel when fans put such weight on what you release? Well, Dan, there's a slight misinterpretation there. Everything I write is from personal experience, but nothing I write is a true story except for one song called Cowboy. Now, let me explain that. I draw from personal experience, but I always felt uncomfortable and cheap. Just kind of, if something really bad's happened to me or a friend or anything, to put that in a song, and because I make money off my music. That's the bit that feels odd. So I'll draw from personal experience and then write a fictional story. So most of the emotion is real. Again, in general, like You Will See Me is a great example. I wrote that for a good friend of mine, in reality, who had gone through a horrible breakup. Now, I drew from multiple previous relationships of mine. And again, I like that as a method. So you don't feel you're kind of cheapening something or cashing in on something that at one point in your life meant a lot. I enjoy that as a kind of, I'll draw from multiple different relationships and turn it into a story as if it's one. And that's kind of how I write. So yeah, I'm happy when people relate to it. I mean, happy is a tough word because most of my songs are depressing as fuck. So if you relate to it, you're going through a rough time. So I'm not happy, but it's kind of nice to realise that other people have gone through these things and see what clicks. So yeah, it's pretty cool. James Alexander McLeod. Now you work within the acting industry. Do you feel pressure to have certain political persuasions? Hello, sir. I'm gonna pause my I'm gonna pause the question here on my podcast. Come over and chat. I've just been jogged past by officer number one in the film we're making at the moment. It was Adam, right? We only met briefly yesterday. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm quite tired. I've just been for a run because you know, I like to keep my body at peak physical condition.
Peak physical condition is the way.
My body is a temple.
I'm recording a little extra podcast I do, and I've been telling them about this crazy town of Mello. That there's you were telling us yesterday, there's literally nothing here.
I can't explain quite how little there is.
I walked for 10 minutes earlier and got to a cash machine, and the cash machine wasn't working. And I was like, I give up then. I thought, oh, I found a cash machine, because even though there's nothing to spend it on, I felt I'd be more comfortable if I've got a tenner in my pocket.
Yeah, sure.
Just so you know, nice, if something happens, liquid. I've got something. But yeah, had nothing.
The cash machine's broken, is it?
Yeah, the cash machine's broken. Or that's what I got in my limited French. I put a card in and a cross came up. I don't know if it just didn't accept English cards.
Just doesn't,
but
like you, yeah.
It was strange. But yeah, it's been good, isn't it? So far. So you've been on this. I've not told them too much about the project because obviously I never know what you can. But amazing location, right?
It's an incredible location, yeah, yeah. Chateau Chambly is beautiful and up on a hill with fantastic views all around. And the crew are doing their best to make it look like a spooky haunted house, actually.
It's amazing. That's what excited me yesterday. Was I loved the script anyway, but seeing the tone of the location, like colours-wise and style-wise, it made me think of what we do in The Shadows and loads of just really good kind of odd indie horror comedy type films almost, which I hadn't got that from the script particularly. No. So it was exciting to get there and go, oh wow,
it's bordering on Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
times,
yeah, completely.
Which I love. I just got a little bit lost incidentally and found myself in an old abandoned quarry.
Oh
which
wow.
Was really Scooby-Doo.
I walked up that way to try and find somewhere to sit to do the pod. But again, this is such a weird town. There's not really any benches anywhere or anything.
No benches,
I walked, there was a
the
lovely field. The pavements just stop everywhere, the roads stop everywhere. So yeah, I walked up there and then thought, well, I saw a rock to sit on back there, so I'll go back and sit there. But I'll let you get back to your run.
This bearded 6 foot something gnome
I've been telling people that the windstopper I've got just looks like a troll doll. So cars driving past, I'm just talking to a toy troll. And I look absolutely insane.
It does look like that, but do you know what?
In a foreign tongue as well.
Yeah. After a week and a half on this project, I wasn't remotely surprised.
Well, perfect. I'll let you get back to your run. And are you in today?
I'm in later on, yes.
I'm in later on as well, so I'll see you in there.
I'll see you there. Have
pleasure.
Fun.
I'll see you in a bit, Ben.
I'll love your podcast.
I will. That was a nice little interruption. Right. So, the question was, James Alex McLeod, now you work within the acting industry, do you feel pressure to have certain political persuasions or views on certain topics? Do you think it would you would find it difficult to get roles if you didn't? Also, do you hear the sort of rumours you are now being exposed to within the industry? On the rumours front, I haven't heard shit. And I think if anyone follows me on social media, you'll know that I wouldn't be a good person to talk to about that shit around, because I'd not... Oh, no, I would be a good person to, because fuck you. I ain't keeping quiet about stuff like that. It's nonsense. Although I've just said that I don't believe in public trial. Anyway, on the political stuff, not at all, man. I've had a career for 10 years before getting into this, so I can't hide from my views and opinions. I've been very outspoken in the past on numerous topics and subjects, so the beauty of that is anyone that's bringing me into a project, I don't feel any pressure to be anything other than me. They will have brought me in because they've enjoyed my audition and me, and yeah, I don't know, they'll get what they fucking asked for. But yeah, I will say I'm loving it. Hang on, there was a question that relates to this. I'm trying to, I've half read these, and I'm trying to tie some together when it feels right. But I want to credit people when they have asked it. Hang on. No, I don't know where that's gone. I must have not taken a picture of that one. Someone asked when I got the acting bug, and if it was just happened now, and I'm jumping on it. When I took on the name Scroobius Pip, someone else asked what my name means. I took on the name Scroobius Pip because it's from an Edward Lear poem, and it's about a creature that wakes up in the jungle. I've explained this numerous times, and doesn't know what it is, and it goes with a fish for a bit, and you realise it isn't a fish. It goes with the lions for a bit, realise it isn't a lion, and then decides it is a Scroobius Pip. Now, that resonated with me, because at the time, I was working in a record store. I was also doing a lot of street art. I was trying to write and make and act in short films with my mates. I was rapping, I was doing spoken word, and I was doing photography. So it was that thing of going, right, I can be all of these things. I don't have to be one thing. And that's what's been nice in this acting thing, is a lot of people have asked how the transition has been, and I've never really seen it as a transition. I'm just continuing to do stuff that's interesting. All the while that I was doing music, I had like a period where I had a film night at the Prince Charles Cinema, and I've had my We Are Lizards Club night for ages, which actually, when you listen to this, it might not have happened yet. So I had the last run of the year is November 25th at the Book Club. Come on down. Yeah, and I was, you know, I had my radio show, or I was doing the graphic novel of poetry, and just all sorts of things like that. I've always kind of tried to not tag myself anywhere, and I slipped out of it. It took me longer to go into acting than I'd planned, and it took Simon Pegg and Riz Ahmed and Nick Frost continually saying to me, when are you going to start acting? So Nick and Simon, no, Nick and Riz are in a little viral advert that me and Dan did for our second album, all shot in Banquet Records in Kingston. And both of them have said from then, I remember on that day, Riz specifically saying, so when you starting acting, bro? And their argument was always, you know, in that angry song, you know, when you perform that on stage, you know, you're not actually angry. You know, you're acting. And you know, in that music video, you know, when you got that emotional bit, you know, you're not actually emotional. That's acting. And they just kind of kept on at me. And that's what's jumped me to where I am today. And man, I love it. I can't get enough. I'm so excited about all the potential things in the future. People often, I've probably answered this before, but I was discussing this with some of the cast yesterday. People often ask, like, what's your dream role? And obviously there's things like, I love Marvel, I love Peaky Blinders, things like that. But the thing I'm loving about this industry is the dream role turns up on your desk every few weeks, and you'd never heard of it before then. And Taboo's a prime example of that. When I got Taboo, I'd gone in for a meeting with this particular casting director, and she'd said, I like you for Game of Thrones and for Taboo and for one other thing. And I'd never heard of the other two. I was like, I'm up for Game of Thrones. Let's make that happen. And then I heard about Taboo, and they sent the details, and it's Stephen Knight and Ridley Scott and Tom Hardy and Stephen Graham. So again, yeah, that's what excites me about this industry, is all the stuff that is round the corner. Like next year, I've no idea what next year holds. I've auditioned for some stuff. I've got a script I'm trying to get made. I know Taboo's coming again at some point. But other than that, it's a mystery. This year, I've done two films that I didn't know anything about at the beginning of the year. And there might be another little thing that I might be doing before the end of the year, I'm waiting to hear on. It's mad. I love it. Anyway, Graham Clark. I loved when you gave us the backing track of yours to put our own lyrics over. Have you any plans to do it the other way round so we can build a track with your vocals? Not particularly, no. We did that for the 10-year anniversary of Thou Shalt Always Kill, and it went down a treat. Yeah, but no particular plans. I don't have any of that stuff. I have people ask me all the time, but I don't have a folder of acapellas. Dan will have somewhere. Maybe me and Dan should put up an album of beats and an album of acapellas available separately at a low price, because I think we should fucking charge. Like, why not? We put a lot of time into that stuff. It's nice to give stuff away for free, but I give you a podcast every week for free, so I'm fine with saying, let's make a few quid off this. But yeah, I don't know, I'll think on that. That might have pissed a lot of people off as I said that, but fuck it. Tom Scott, as far as I understand, you enjoy rock, punk and metal, etc. Do you see yourself having musicians from these genres on the podcast anytime soon? I'm not a huge Limp Bizkit fan, but really enjoyed the Wes Borland episode. So did I, man. And you got to, if you've missed them, you got to kind of listen to the Frank Carter episode, the Frank Turner episode, the Billy Bragg episode. I've had a decent amount of rock people on. But I do plan to have more. Cedric Bixler of At The Drive-In and Travis Barker of Everything are two that I've come close numerous times. And we chat, and they're both up for it, and we want to make it happen, but it's a case of being in different countries. Again, what a lot of people don't realise is it's number one, I have to be able to contact the person and they have to be up for it. Number two, we have to be in the same place at the same time. And I live a busy life, and they all live busy lives. That's what makes them such desirable guests to me. But yeah, I'm going to try and have Cedric on in the new year, and Travis I had lined up twice this year, and it just slipped through our fingers each time. And each time he's hit me up about it, which is dope, because I love Travis Barker. He's a dude. Who else do I plan to have on, musician-wise? I'd love to have Danny Lonner on. He's going to take some convincing, though. He's one of my favourite people in the world, of Nine Inch Nails and of Perfect Circle and all these other amazing things. And he produced Interdiction. And I love him dearly, and he's got the best stories, but he's not the biggest fan of the idea of coming and sitting and doing a podcast. But I'll twist his arm at some point. Tom Morello, I kind of talked to a few times about coming on. This was a year or so ago, and it didn't evolve. But yeah, I definitely plan to have more. But again, it's all, so much of this is down to chance, as much as, if not more, than desire or want. It's timing, it's who's about, and who works. Jean Grey, the other week, is a prime example of that. That's 3 years in, and she was on my first original list of people. Like, literally in the first 10 people I wrote down to have on the podcast. And I got round to having her on 178th, I think. So, yeah, is what it is sometimes, my man. Shall I start to round things up? Let me see. Here we go. I'll end on this one, and I will also say I'm going to do a part two of this, because there's a load I've not got round to. It might be a shorter one, I don't know, but go and find that post on Facebook, and you might have time to add a question that gets answered. Okay, Memoir Shay, I believe that's pronounced. Do you have any recurring or nightmares? Any nightmares, recurring or otherwise, that haunt you? I do. I wonder when others also do. How do they fight the anxiety? I don't have regular ones, but I have had some horrible ones in the past. It's weird how nightmares can completely ruin your day. I've suffered from insomnia a lot. I talk about this all the time. I've had a lot of that recently, actually. I've had a few things just playing on my mind and stressing me out, and that often contributes to my insomnia. One of the reasons for anything I can call success are my personality traits, and they're also the reasons for a lot of my stresses and problems and troubles. I overthink things a lot, and I overanalyze things a lot, and I hold myself to a very high standard work-wise and things like that. And that has achieved a lot. That's the reason I get a lot of stuff done and the reason I'm so driven at times. But it's also the reason I lie awake at night and go, so what have I actually done this year? Yeah, I've done some podcasts and I've done a couple of films, but the script I've written a script, it's really good, but it's not being made yet. Why isn't it being made yet? And things like that, do you know what I mean? Like ridiculous standards to hold yourself to. And worrying about friends and family and loved ones and this weird world that we live in. But yeah, I'm quite good. Someone tweeted me the other day saying, it's 1 a.m. I've got insomnia. Have you got any advice? I know you suffer from it. I said to him, it was a Saturday night, and I said, you working tomorrow? And he was like, nah. And I was like, well, it's not a problem then. Do you know what I mean? It all becomes a bigger deal than it is. Or with insomnia, I think often the biggest thing. Because the reality is, I can be absolutely fine on a few hours sleep. So the reality is, if I just accept it and sling the TV on or pop some music on or do something else, I'll drift off at some point. And it's not the end of the world. Whereas if I lay there all night going, oh God, I need to get to sleep, then I'll overthink stuff and have a horrible time. So that's my advice. Now, on the dream front, it's tough, man. I've known a lot of people that have suffered hugely from night terrors and horrific things. And it can develop a real fear of going to sleep and not wanting to be asleep. And I can't solve that. I wish I could. But I would say there's plenty of times you don't have horrible night terrors and horrible recurring nightmares, and there's plenty of times that you have lovely ones, or even every time you've had bad ones, you've woken up and been all right. So, you know, some solace in that. I think we can strive to take control a little bit. I think if we go to bed fearing what is to come in our dreams, then it's more likely to find something bad. If you go to bed thinking of cool shit, then it's more likely to influence it. Or go to bed thinking of proper dirty shit. Like, just go to bed thinking of real sexy filth. And you're likely to end up in a better place than if you go to bed thinking, oh, this is going to be bad. Because it is all in our heads. It's our heads. It's our minds. So if you go to bed thinking of great adventures and the fun you're going to have, it might influence that. It doesn't always. I've not got a solution. I did have a recurring dream for years as a child, which I found out when I had hypnosis at about the age of, 12 or 13, that's how I found out that I got my stutter on cue, from almost drowning as a kid. And it's also where I found out that that's what my recurring dream was about, because I had this recurring dream that a witch was coming upstairs. I forget about this all the time. I had someone mention it on Facebook or something once. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then it clicked. But I had this recurring dream that a witch was coming up my stairs in my mum and dad's house. I was in my bedroom, it's in the living room, it's coming up the stairs, and I was trying to scream out to my mum and dad, and I couldn't scream, and no words were coming out. And it turns out, this person theorised, is that comes from when I was a kid and almost drowned, I was trying to scream to my mum and dad who were on the beach, and waves were going in my mouth. So each time I went to scream, just... And that's exactly how it felt in reality, in the dream, this lack of being able to scream. And I remember that as a kid and being scared to go to sleep, because it's like, oh, I don't want to go and I don't want the witch to come. But as an adult now, as I said, I can see that even if it's absolutely horrific, you can wake up and it's all good. I'll tell you now, I'll end on a more positive note of a dream I had, because the ability to wake yourself up in a dream is a good thing, and it's often at the point you realise it's a dream, or having the realisation it's a dream. And I messaged Ramesh Ranganathan about this the other day, because I had a dream that I was at the courtyard at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, the Pleasance Courtyard, and Ramesh was there. And he was hanging out, and he was catching up with everyone. And then I spoke to him, and he was like, yeah, I've not got a show today. I just thought I'd come and hang out with all the other comedians in the courtyard. And genuinely, that was the point. I went, this is a dream, isn't it? Because it was genuinely not realistic to me or inconceivable to me that Ramesh would choose to come and hang out with these people on a day that isn't a gig day. Because I know Ramesh, and he wouldn't. And I messaged Ramesh about that. And I even pointed out that the night before, I'd dreamt of riding on a dragon, and that hadn't twigged as a dream. So riding on a dragon was more realistic than Ramesh choosing on his day off to come and just hang out in the Pleasance courtyard. So yeah, there we go, on that bombshell. Thank you for tuning in. I'm going to try and put this out this Friday, so after the Jean Grey episode. And then, so next Wednesday, you're going to have Johnny Lee Miller, and it's a fantastic chat, absolute dude. Then the week after that, I think we're going to have Rick Edwards doing a fantastic... Oh, honestly, you're going to nerd out over this one. We talk a bit about his podcast, but his podcast is about the science behind movies, so it's a massive nerd out on films and science. It's really good. So yeah, that's to come. I've got a special one coming up about vinyl with the writer of a book about why vinyl matters and the history of vinyl and pop music. Had loads of good stuff to come, so tune in. Oh, actually, I should have the ending music and then do an outro. Oh no, I'll do an outro as I go past them dogs. I'm figuring it all out as I go along. All right, well, thank you for tuning in. I'll answer more of these, and you might be able to... It depends on if I get time this week to have recorded a part two. You might have missed the chance to add questions, but if I don't, then add some questions if you hear this. Oh, I'm jumping down off the rock. Oh, ow. Oh, God, I'm covered in dirt. I look an absolute mess. Anyway, I'm going to go, and then when I get to the dogs, I'll record an outro. All right.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
Right, here's the first. There's three dogs here. All right, guys. They're nice looking, though. They're angry, but then... Oh, one of them's just cleaning his bum. Yeah, through the power of time travel, I've jumped forward 10 minutes in time from when you last spoke to me. Even though it was just a brief moment, and I'm walking down this nice hill, and there was three dogs there, but they're not the ones that were scary. There's this one who proper hates me, so I'm going to keep walking and try and go past him. As I said, thank you for tuning in. If you want to go to speechdevelopmentrecords.com and buy some merch, that'd be lovely. You can rate and review on iTunes. Apparently that helps or something. Oh, this path I'm going down, it's not steps, it's like a slippery slope path. So when this dog jumps up, I'm going to shit myself and fall over. So that's nice. This was a bad idea, you know. I can genuinely see this part of the podcast going very wrong, or this part of my life. I'm walking so slowly down this weird slope, and the dog's going to jump out and scare the shit out of me. Unless he's gone, and it'll be a really anticlimactic end of the podcast. Nope, that's the garden he was in. I think he's gone. I think he's bloody gone. As a result, at least I'm not going to die. I mean, it's bad news for you guys, because you don't get to hear an angry a French dog. But it's good news for me, because it means I've made it down and I didn't fall over. Well, there we go. That's a that's a hell of an end. They've obviously taken him in because he was so angry. Honestly, he was right stressed out, that lad. I walked past him and he was really quite aggressive towards me, and I found it unacceptable. Well, as I said, thank you for tuning in. Head to speechdevelopmentrecords.com for signed copies of my book. That's plural. A signed copy of my DVD would be a good Christmas present for that special someone. There's also jumpers, T-shirts, scarves, bobble hats, umbrellas, swimsuits, leggings. This sounds like I'm doing a joke, but I genuinely have made all of those as merch because I'm a weirdo. Yeah, cool stuff, right? I think so. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on Wednesday. This has been a bonus episode, so if you've not enjoyed it, go fuck yourself. Ta-ta. Au revoir.
A change of seasons means adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow, or all of the above on the same day. This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. With all-condition traction and materials and features to keep you comfy and dry no matter what, you'll be ready for anything. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. Allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.